Welcome everyone to Wednesday Night Class. Tonight we have our brother Andrew Gilmore speaking to us on training in godliness, how to build stamina. Andrew has asked that we read 1 Timothy 4 as an opening for his class tonight. So I'd like to introduce Brother Andrew to his talk tonight, Training in Godliness, How to Build Stamina. Thank you.
Okay, that's better. Good. Good evening, brothers and sisters. Thank you. Tonight, I want to look at a simple topic. Let me get me in the spot. You can all see me and the board. Training in Godliness, How to Build Stamina. Now, this came to me from a recent idea I had about how nice it'd be if I was able to get around to work and everywhere that I want to be without spending money on fuel. And it came to me, I actually have a way to do that, or I had, I should say. For a couple of years of my last job, I was actually cycling to work. It was great for me. I was building up my own stamina, building up my own fitness, and getting to work without having to pay for fuel at all. But my workplace back in Brisbane was about 12 kilometres away from my house. So it was not something that I could just jump on my bike and start cycling there and back every day. What I had to do is I had to train, quite literally. And training was not something that I could start off with and then just never do again once I actually started going to work. What I was doing is building myself up, slowly working my way, doing small cycles, until eventually I could do that full bike ride there and back. But then I couldn't just keep doing that every day because I still was not there yet. It was a lot of rest, recovery, and figuring out what I was doing wrong and what I needed to do better to get faster and get better at it. And that's what tonight is about. Not about how to cycle better, how to go do a 100-kilometer bike ride at some point, or even how to get better in the gym. But all of them have got, I think, a very similar method behind it of how you need to train. There's three things I want to have a look at here. And I want to use this metaphor because Paul used it for a very specific reason. But I personally think Paul at some point encountered an Olympian in his many travels, and he himself was impacted by the remarkable effort that these Olympians have to do back then and even today. They're not trying in godliness. They're not having a go in godliness. They're quite literally every day training, recovering, fueling themselves up. Repeat that every single day. And not just once they've done the race, but every day after that. Because there is many races they have to do. And for us, as Paul has told us many times before, there is many races that we have to do as well. So much so that he just says, it's one continuous race. Fight the good fight. Finish the race. Never give up. So I think, personally, there is three main things that all come under training and godliness, hence why I've got the three columns here. The first thing I think that's important, actually training and godliness, is your form. I use a person doing a deadlift as an example because they are, well, anyone who's been to a gym will hurt their back and tell you, if you do a deadlift with the wrong form, what happens? You can't do anything. You've injured yourself. You set yourself back. So just like going to the gym, just like doing anything else, you need to have good form. Next up, you need to fuel yourself correctly. If you want to go on a long cycle, you can't just eat a giant bowl of spaghetti 5 minutes before you leave and expect yourself to succeed. But you can't have nothing when you go on a long marathon because you won't succeed either. You'll fall away back into the world and find yourself not being close to God. And then there's rest and recovery. Rest and recovery for anything is not just sitting around doing nothing, lounging there. It's about doing the right kind of rest. And in our spiritual lives, we need to do rest correctly. Because yes, It would be very easy to just pull ourselves away from God. That's rest from God. We're quite literally not being involved with him. But that's bad rest. Just like for an Olympian, bad rest would be going to Macca's and gorging on anything they want and no longer training. When I was doing bike rides, my version of rest was going on a nice, simple walk. Get the muscles moving, but not a massive walk, just 10-minute walk to keep the blood flowing. For someone who does long-distance running, they'll tell you how important it is to stretch your muscles after you do a run and do proper recovery, or you'll get cramps and you'll find that you're unable to do your race that you're planning to do a few days later. So I think there is a few people we can look at and see how they apply these things into their spiritual lives. What was their form? What was their fuel? And what was their recovery? What was their rest that they did? Maybe there's some people who didn't succeed in these things that show us how not to do it. I think the first person we can look at is David. If you look to 1 Samuel 16, we can have a look at how his form actually started. What was he doing at the very beginning? You read in 16, I read from the ESV here, just in verse 11, we can see the form, how David was shaping his life before he was even needing to use his training. Verse 11, then Samuel said to Jesse, are all your sons here? And he said, there remains yet the youngest, but behold, he is keeping the sheep. Keeping the sheep doesn't seem like the best training you'd think. Keep your finger here in Samuel, 1 Samuel 16. But if you turn to Psalm 23, we can have a look and see that's actually the perfect example of how to train yourself to be a godly man. My Bible literally says it right here as a title for it. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is my shepherd that I shall not want. David was a shepherd. The Lord is a shepherd. They both did the same thing. They were looking after people who are unable to care for themselves, people who don't know what's best for them, able to look after them, treat them, uplift them, make sure they live a happy life. Just over the page in 1 Samuel 17, we read that Saul is asking David, how on earth are you going to be able to fight Goliath? And David tells him, well, he's been training in godliness because his form was there. He's practiced himself to look after people and defend against things bigger than him. For David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. So I think that was David's form, is he's practicing in the little things. So for us, practicing in the little things, I would say, is something as simple as what we're doing at home. When you stub your toe on the kitchen counter, do you go ahead and start swearing at it, cursing at it, getting angry? Some do. Maybe that's not the best thing. Sure, is it really that bad of a thing to do? May not be now, but if we're training ourselves to do that, what's going to happen when it comes to real life, out in the world where we accidentally bump into someone? We've had a bad day. If we've trained ourselves to go ahead and curse at every little thing, well, we might end up cursing at this person. Now we're doing something wrong. So if we train our own form, just like David was training his own form to look after the sheep, he was ready when the real world came knocking. So training in the small things. That was what David was doing to prepare himself for his time as king and ruler over all of Israel. Now, what did David use to fuel himself? What really was his passion, and kept him motivated? I think this one's probably the most obvious. It's his music, his love for music. right after, just right here in 1 Samuel 16 or 17, I believe, he's talking about, in fact, he was recommended to, in verse 18 of chapter 16, one of the young men answered, "Behold, I have seen the son of Jesse, the Bethlehemite, who is skillful in playing, a man of valor, who is prudent in speech and good present, and God is with him." He knew he was good at music, and that's what David was using as his fuel. It's also in all the psalms that he's written. There are so many psalms in there related to very different situations he had that he used to keep his passion alive. I think a lot of people can relate to this. How many people will find that music fuels them to get closer to God? Surely some. One, two. Yeah, quite a few people. They love going to praise night singing because they leave it. Tank is full. They're ready to go and follow God even more. So that's an excellent example of fuel. And throughout all of the psalms David has wrote. I'll have a look in a second when we look at rest about how important fuel was to him. In fact, we will look at rest right now because this is where fuel and rest can also be a bit conflated as well. For some, prayer might be a really good example of fuel for them. They get a lot of prayer done and they fuel themselves and they're ready to go. For some, prayer is more a recovery thing. I think in David's case, prayer was a lot more of a recovery for him. When David has been chased by Saul, his life is on the line. He could be killed at any moment. He's probably terrified. There's a lot of emotions going through him. And when he finally finds Saul in the cave, you'd expect that David, full of emotion, realizing that he could end everything right here to kill Saul, that's what he would do. But he doesn't. We read later on in Samuel how David had been in the cave. He had been in a state of prayerfulness. He'd been in a state of rest, recovery. And it meant that when the time came, when he had Saul's life in his hands, he instead cut his cloak and knew this is not what God wanted. I've rested myself and I realize that to do what God wants, I need to pray. So I'd say for David, prayer is what his recovery is. So this is how David trains in godliness. Maybe this is the strategy we should do for training ourselves in godliness. The little things, preparing ourselves in the little things we do by ourselves, fuel ourselves with music. And then when we're exhausted from everyone around us to keep ourselves close to God, we go home, sit down in bed, and say a prayer. How many people have fallen asleep while praying to God? If you haven't, I highly recommend tonight, when you're very tired, go lie down in bed and say a prayer to God, knowing full well you're going to go to sleep. It's best when you do it unintentionally, though, but there is no harm in the last thing you do for that day is praying to God, because that is restful, and you'll wake up feeling a lot closer to God and a lot ready, and maybe in this case, this might be your fuel to keep going for the day ahead. I want to look at another person now. If you want to turn to Genesis 37, we will look at Joseph. Joseph's an interesting character because, unlike David, we don't get a very in-depth look about all of his life. We do get to see what happens to him, but we don't really see his thoughts. With David, we can see all his thoughts in his psalms and his prayers that he's done, how he's thinking, but Joseph, we more get an outline about his story. You see in Joseph 37, when he's just talking about the dreams, this is his first example, of, I think, of how we can see how Joseph structures his life to God. He dreams in verse 9, then he dreams verse 5, now Joseph had a dream, and when he told his brothers, they hated him even more. In verse 9, then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers. Doesn't sound like much, but how many of you have a dream about something really weird, like your siblings worshipping you and think, wow, God was working with me? I'm going to go tell my siblings about this. It's a bit weird, but I think what this shows is that Joseph was unafraid to connect God with the people around him, even his own family. In the workplace, how often do we actually talk about God? How often do we see something and immediately think, oh, that was God working, and start talking to your coworkers about it? Some people don't because they find, well, it's not the right social situation. Maybe this is an example of 17-year-old Joseph just not having good social awareness, not knowing when it was the right time to talk about stuff. Or maybe this is an example of Joseph realizing God's working in his life, and instead of being afraid to talk about it, he's going out and wanting to share with everyone that I think God's working with me in some way. I can see it and I want to share it with you. So in Joseph's case, I would say this first example of good structure in his life is being unafraid to talk about God, unafraid to connect God with the outside world. So I'll say, unafraid of God in social settings. This form helps him. Not long later, and finds himself in Egypt and is being tempted by Potiphar's wife. Instead of falling towards her, he has already been training himself in godliness. In the very beginning, because his form is right there, he knows that leaning towards God is better than leaning towards the world. And he ends up in jail. So what's his fuel, though? What's driving him? Because if we put ourselves in his shoes, I think anyone could find that there is no sort of fuel that would keep them going and make them go, that they want to keep pushing towards God. Yet Joseph does, and I'm going to take an interesting view about the dreams that he was interpreting in Genesis 40. We know that one night, both a baker and a butler woke up in a very panicked state, for they had both dreamed, starting in verse 5, that they had both dreamed the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in prison, each having his own dream. And he asked for his officers who were with them in custody of the master's house, why your face is downcast? For they said, we had a dream and there's no one to interpret them. And Joseph said, do not interpretations belong to God? I think this is an example of a prophecy being fulfilled. Joseph knows immediately that, well, this is something that God is predicting, not me. That's a prophecy. Anything that God states, not predicts, that's probably the wrong word to say, anything God states in the future is a prophecy. And Joseph tells the cupbearer and the baker that these things will happen to him. And then literally, by the time the week is out, the baker is dead, the cupbearer is back to his position exactly as it states in Genesis 40. That's prophecy being fulfilled. It's not what we think of when we think of prophecy. When I say prophecy, people think of something in Isaiah that's going to happen hopefully in the next few years or so. Still a prophecy, though. And for Joseph, I think that was his fuel. He sees something getting fulfilled and he realizes, wow, I was right. These interpretations that God worked through me are correct. God is with me. That's giving him a lot of drive and power to stay focused in prison. Who here would say that seeing prophecy get fulfilled is their fuel? That's something that gets them excited to follow God. A couple of people here, yeah. I can understand that. If you've lived your whole life reading about something and then suddenly it gets fulfilled, you see it in the news, I can fully understand why that would suddenly be your drive to say, you know what, I will go to Bible class tonight. You know what, I think I will wake up early for the meeting, even though it's a 10 a.m. start. because these things are coming true. I've got the fuel to keep going. So, prophecy being fulfilled. And finally, what was Joseph's rest? Like I said, we don't really get an in-depth understanding of Joseph's mind during however many years he was in prison. But I think we can gather just from the clues that his rest was very similar to David's quiet, lonely prayer with God, connecting himself with God, remembering those prophecies that had been fulfilled. He's trained himself his whole life to lean towards God. And then one day, he would have woken up, thought it was another day, started praying to God, and suddenly someone comes running down to the prison and declares to him, "You need to come up. We hear you know how to interpret dreams." He's had years of just sitting there doing nothing, and his training in godliness has worked out for him. Because when push comes to shove, he's put in front of Pharaoh and asked to interpret his dream. He says, once again, well, that's up for God to interpret. He connects himself with God, interprets a dream, which in itself is a prophecy, and it gets fulfilled. And Joseph, with all his training, instead of using the great power that Pharaoh gave him to do good, to do evil, sorry, he goes ahead and uses it not just to do good for the people of Egypt, but he uses it to save his own family. He could have had himself falling the wrong way the entire time. He could have slept with Potiphar's wife. He wouldn't have been in jail. But then when that famine came, there would be no one to save his family. There, of course, this would never have happened because God's in control, but it's interesting to think what would have happened if none of this had gone that way. There'd be no nation of Israel, no children of Abraham. Of course, God works in different ways, so it would not have happened, but it's interesting to think in that way. So those are a few things that we can do to structure ourselves correctly. Do the small things in our life correctly and be unafraid to connect God in our own lives and find what fuels us, whether it's music, seeing prophecy fulfilled, and then at the end of it all, go home and have a little bit of quiet, restful prayer with God. There's one more person I want to look at who's got a more of a mixed idea of what to do. And we can take a few good and bad lessons from him. If you want to turn to Judges 13, we will look at good old Samson. Well, yes. I would say it is rest, but you're right with it being a mix of fuel as well. Because for some people, prayer is what fuels them. They feel really close to God. I think a good example of that would be an extrovert and an introvert. For the extrovert, a big social gathering is good fuel for them. For an introvert, it's not really good fuel. Their fuel is a small, tight-knit gathering. That really fuels them up, gets them excited about it. But an extrovert might really call that small gathering as a restful period. They're seeing this as this is just a bit of a rest, but I'm going to go fuel up when I go to a big suburban tonight. So that's what I mean by, for some people, something might be fuel, for others, it might be rest. For some people here, a big praise night might be fun and exciting, but it's a bit draining and they want to go home and just be close with God. If we want to look at Judges 13, we can read how Samson's life was meant to be structured in a way closer to God. Because before he was even born, he was destined to be taking the Nazarite vow, which would mean no alcohol, no cutting his hair, no touching of dead animals. So not not doing these things aren't necessarily bad, unless, of course, you've taken a Nazirite vow. But you can apply that to anything in our life. Sure, like, going out and clubbing might not be a bad thing per se in the moment, but you're leaning yourself the wrong way. And I like to take a quote from the Lorax. What way does the tree fall? Correct. The tree falls the way it leans. Be careful which way you lean. If you're leaning towards the world, you're going to fall towards the world. If you lean towards God, you'll fall towards God. So in Samson's case here, well, he's leaning towards God, of course. He's taken a Nazirite vow and everything's going to end up great for him. We read, in fact, in Judges 14, he finds himself in verse 8 that he's walking down road and he turns to see the carcass of a lion and behold a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. The Nazirite vow says don't touch the lion. So of course, in verse 9, he scrapes it out of his hands and went on eating as he went. He kind of just disobeyed that vow that he was meant to be following. He's just touched a dead carcass. As I said before, it's not the worst thing in the world, ignoring the fact he broke a Nazirite vow, but he's now showing that he's leaning not towards God, but towards the world. Earlier on in Judges 14, we can see that he had gone into Philistine territory and he'd seen a lovely woman. And he says in verse 2, he told his father and mother, I saw one of the daughters of the Philistines at Timnah, and now I want her as my wife. But his father and mother said to him, is there not a woman among the daughters of your cousins or among all of the people that you must go out and take a wife from the Philistines? And he says, go get her for me, for she is right in my eyes. Once again, bad form. He's leaning towards the world. It's not the worst thing in the world. Some would argue it's not a sin. But if you're having to go around and say, well, it's not technically a sin, what's the difference? Like, seriously. If you have to go and justify, well, if you look at this chapter here in this context, it's not that bad, maybe you shouldn't do it. It's not what Samson did. He realized, well, I'm leaning the wrong way and I don't care. So we'll write that down as a bad thing down here, leaning to the world. And the little things like justifying that it's right in my eyes, so it's not that bad. Because in the right context, it's okay. It's at least what Samson thinks. What about his fuel? Well, Samson doesn't have any fuel. He's not really, if you read Judges 13 through to 16, there's not really anything he's doing to fuel himself to God. He doesn't have any passion to get closer to God. Most importantly, he doesn't have any rest at all. And I'll take that back. He has been restful from God, but he's having bad rest. His version of rest is literally just ignoring God and almost pretending he's not there. We can do that so easily. Go to the meeting on Sunday. Yeah, we've done a bit of good in our life. We're structuring our life to go to the meeting on Sunday. And then we ignore God for the rest of the week. Yes, we're being restful and taking ourselves away from all the excitement of the world. But we're not really following God. We might be poisoning our own fuel source as well. I talked about prayer, going to bed, being quiet and meditating with God. But our quiet moments might actually be lying in bed, scrolling through social media. That's not really restful. It's more poisoning our fuel source, draining our energy to follow God. So when push comes to shove, and Samson needs to show off his training in godliness, how he has been showing his form, his fuel, and his rest, that big race finally comes up. He falls. He takes the bait that Delilah leaves out for him, and he's captured. And it quite literally ends terribly for him. For he dies, even though at the very end he does make that last adjustment, and he realizes I really should have trained in godliness and trained myself to be closer to God. So I'm now going to turn it over to some of you people here. Out of all of these things here, what is something else that you could say is a way to structure your life to be better and closer to God? Shout out something you think.
Listening to the reading instead of one of my sermons.
That's a good idea. Even just doing the readings.
Listen to the readings. It gives you a different aspect.
Okay, reading and listening to it. Yep.
I think with the last one of rest, like Jesus often withdrew himself away from the people. Sometimes it's good to sometimes just withdraw and have like a meditative quiet time, not necessarily for bed, but I'm saying, but any time, just capture those quiet moments and meditate.
I quite agree. Anything about fuel? What do people find drives them to be closer to God?
Promises.
So would you say it's under prophecy or is that different?
Prophecy.
Okay.
What about like you?
That's the first thing I wrote down, so yes, I will. Who finds a deep conversation with brothers and sisters as fuel for them? Yep.
I find studying.
So Bible study, you find that's restful or fuel for you? How else can we structure our lives in the correct way? What's something that we can change with our day-to-day life? About, yeah? I like that. Focus on the finish line. What about consistent prayer? I said prayer is rest, but prayer doesn't have to be restful. How about just consistently praying several times a day, training ourselves to be praying? I'd say that's... In fact, I'll say one thing that I actually saw many years ago, about how important it is to actually force yourself to pray. Because we might not feel like praying, might not feel like we should, but you need to force yourself. Because if you don't force yourself, you'll fall into the habit of not doing it, and you'll fall back to the world. You've got to imagine, even if there is no supernatural force out there, we don't believe in that, there is no supernatural force pulling you to sin. There is your own desire to pull yourself towards sin. So you need to fight back against that desire to not pray several times a day, because your own desires are trying to stop you from doing it. And if you keep doing that, that goes under the whole training in godliness. Structure yourself, pray every day. And then eventually, when push comes to shove, when you start running the race, which is right now, we are running the race this very moment, you won't fall, you won't stumble like Samson did, you won't fall back to the temptations of the world. Yes. Sure. Yep.
I would like to suggest having a long-term program.
Yep.
You described that for your own physical activities earlier. But so you might have a daily program, but you've also got a weekly or monthly or 10-year or whatever program.
Yep. I like that. So it's something you could think we can do on a weekly basis or a monthly basis to train ourselves. Yeah. I think what's important to remember using Paul's metaphor here is a race that an Olympian is running is a short-term thing, but the thing is they are doing it every day. And yes, even if we look at the way that we're training ourselves in godliness to do every day should be the same as the rest if we're doing it correctly. So if we wake up, we do exactly what God wants from us, we live like Jesus, we help spread the gospel and be a beacon in the world, we should repeat that day every day. And the only day we can actually repeat that day every day is if we have trained ourselves to do that. We have followed all these examples. Whatever we find in the Bible is the way that we find is best for us. We give ourselves the right fuel, know that at a certain point our fuel is depleted and we need to come back to the meeting on Sunday and start singing some songs to fuel us up for the week ahead. And if we do it right, yes, this is a daily sort of idea, but if we do one day correct and we just repeat that day every day until the Lord returns, we will be living exactly the way that we should be living. Because at the end of it, we shouldn't be doing all this just to try and finish the race to get into the kingdom. We should be doing it because it's the right thing to do. Like, we don't go around not partying, not sleeping around because, yes, well, because God would be upset is a very valid reason. We should be doing it because Jesus has said this is the way to live your life. All of this, that prayer, that staking away from the world, fueling ourselves with music, it's the right way to live your life. And I'll go back to my quote from the Lorax about how if we find ourselves leaning the wrong way, when we're actually challenged and pushed the wrong way, we're going to just fall all the way over. Pretty sure everyone in this room here will be old enough to know someone who has left the truth at some point, even if they've been baptized or they haven't even been baptized yet. I think every single one of you can think of someone right now. I want you to think in the time leading up to before they officially proclaimed or unofficially started not attending, were they leaning the right way? Would you say they were doing stuff as right in God's eye, or were they more like Samson, the one who would say, well, it's technically okay if we look at it in this context? Just in my personal experience, the people who I've seen unfortunately leave have structured their life incorrectly, have been leaning the wrong way, and when push came to shove, they went the wrong way. And to think that it's not going to happen to us is probably, what's the right word for it? A little pompous to assume that just because we're here tonight, we're never going to fall away. Samson shows that even if we've set ourselves up correctly, we're born into the truth, we're born into the right family, if we don't take initiative to train ourselves in godliness, we will potentially fall away. So I think what we should all look at doing, just start with tonight. Let's have a nice of restful prayer. Go home, go say a prayer as your last thing tonight, and then tomorrow morning, when you kick your toe on the counter as you get up to make breakfast, don't start cursing at it, swearing at it. Just turn the other cheek, as Jesus says, and move on. Force yourself to change your own form, and then find something that fuels you. As you go to work, I love the idea of listening to the readings instead of listening to Spotify. That might be great fuel for us. Yes?
Stephen, on what Stephen was saying in regards to form.
Yes.
One thing that you haven't got there is actually getting involved in the ecclesia.
I love that. I actually had forgotten to put that.
Communities or something like that. That sort of, I suppose, helps leverage that idea of, you know, leaning in to being involved. And in regards to form,
yes.
A lot of people, they find actually serving others as a type of fuel.
Yep, I agree with that entirely.
I've got another one for the form as well.
Yes.
Setting your intentions of choosing love and joy.
Yep.
So in the morning you can get up grumbling, or you can set your mind and go, I'm going to be joyful and full of love.
I like that because, as I was saying before about forcing yourself to do something, if we force ourselves to be thankful and happy, eventually it'll become a habit. We're literally training in godliness so that one day we will wake up and we don't force ourselves to be grateful. We are grateful because we've done the right thing. So
I can also put into our
Yeah? Okay. I like that.
So, Andrew, I've got a Yule.
Yes.
That's probably made on from what Steve said. So, my fuel was Christadelphian Podcast.
Yes, I like that.
Because fuel, mate, sorry, not fuel, form.
Form, you say?
Yeah.
Would you say that's a fuel as well, though?
Well, the thing is that they change you to think in spiritual planes.
Okay.
So it's like you practice thinking like God because you're getting some exposition from His Word that's training you to think down a certain path.
Yep.
So it's a bit like form. So then when you're out in your day, you've sort of got some like a thinking track to go down.
Yep.
So that was my form. But thinking of what Stephen said, all those examples that you gave, see, it's not just us doing the training. We've got a coach.
Yes.
And the coach will point out your problems and your flaws. And every single one of those examples, not so much Joseph particularly, but in the story with his brothers, but David, Samson, God pointed out their flaws. And like, so Samson had a period of prolonged rest where he recalibrated. And it's like, so in a way, what Stephen was saying about our long-term things, through life, God provides experiences to show up flaws in our character that we need to work on.
Yeah.
And often that's a continual thing. That's you're progressing towards, you know, you're mindful of and trying to do better in a certain area.
Mm.
And so that was the same with David, same with Samson. So I would say that Samson prevaricated, but generally he was leaning the right way, because when he did fall, and because, like you said, when God, as the coach, comes into our life and gives us difficulty to try to get us to see things, we can, sometimes that can push us, probably the scope of this talk, push us one way or the other.
Yeah.
And in Samson's case, that difficulty pushed him the right way.
Hmm. I like that. I think it's very important, though, to not think that we know what God knows is right. I love the idea of coaching, because God is definitely the best coach out there, but at times it can be difficult to hear him. Example. Yeah, exactly. So I think it's very important then, as a result, for all of us here to try our best to be a coach for others as well. If someone's struggling, don't let them fall into Samson's trap of going, well, it's right in my eyes, so therefore it's right. We should, as even though I know Jesus said in Matthew 7 to look at the log in your own eye instead of the speck in the others, but at the same time, if we be a coach for one another, we can help uplift ourselves and not fall into Samson's trap of thinking he knew everything and knew that what he was doing was right because he saw it as right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
I was thinking on the recovery side, because spending time with people who are optimistic, it's not necessarily more purposeful than just having dinner together. But you can really get energy from good people.
Yes.
So, like on this topic, I'm looking up with Steve and Annie Don, I think, you know, I'm going to spend time with Annie Don, she's such a good person. There are people that just that give us energy in the right direction. You know, bad company corrupt. Yeah, what was it?
Bad company corrupts good
managers. Right. So if we're spending time with the joyful, with the hopeful, with the optimistic, we can't help it. It's contagious.
Yeah. I like that. So
just got another thought. In our lives, we're actually in a team. We're not running against each other.
Yes.
We're in a team.
Exactly.
We feed off each other. So that's a fuel as well.
Yes.
We can share advantages.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's great. If you find, like, I love this because everyone's got their own idea of what they find is fuel for them. And maybe some of you are looking at this and go, I never thought of that as fuel. And now we can go home and go, I'm actually going to try that out because that might fuel me for tomorrow's troubles. So I'll leave it at that, but I'll leave this up because I think it's very important. As I said, start with tonight with a restful prayer. Tomorrow, start structuring our own lives to be leaning towards God and find ourselves some fuel. Music might not be your best thing. Prophecy might not be great for you too because you don't like seeing the troubles of the world, but find this, and if you're not sure whether something is right, whether it's the right fuel or the right form, don't just assume it's the right thing to do. As I said, we are each other's coaches, we are each other's trainers, we can give each other tips. So come back here on Sunday, go to whatever ecclesia might be what you want to do on Sunday, and discuss with your brothers and sisters, share in fellowship. That might be fuel for yourself, and train in godliness. As Paul said, don't try in godliness, don't have a go at it. Train so that you can keep running the race until the very end.